working backwards from next week, seeing as we would like to devote next week to Inyani Pesach and Haggadah, and seeing also as of last year, we had never had a shiur on Parshas Tzav. Tzav always got pushed aside either through Pesach or through Purim in a Shana Me'uberes, so we devoted last year's Vayikra shiur to Tzav, and I would like to do the same this year. And therefore, this evening, Mitzvah Hashem will take a look at Tzav. We will probably be the most prepared around for next week's Parsha. And then next week, we will take a look at Pesach and Haggadah. Tzav, of course, begins with Tzav, the beginning of Perek Vav. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe le'mor, Tzav es Aharon ve'es bonov le'mor zot Toras Ha'ola. To command Aharon and his sons. This is the Torah of the Ola, of the burnt offering. And Rashi comments on the words Tzav es Aharon. The Pasuk doesn't say Daber el Aharon, which or Emor el Aharon, but Tzav es Aharon. And Rashi says, well-known words, Ein Tzav el Eloshon Zirus. The word Tzav has a connotation of energizing, of encouraging and activating. Miyad uladoros, now and for future generations. And that's a very interesting and very specific formula. Tzav has a connotation of zeros. Somehow there's an aspect that needs to be kept an eye on. Miyad uladoros. And the question that the Mefarshim ask is, what is it about Toras Ha'ola, about this context that requires this zeros? What is the nature of this zeros? What is it that we need to be so careful about? And moreover, this specific phraseology of Miyad Uladoros, for immediate and for future generations. Normally speaking, whenever anything is said, it is said, unless otherwise qualified, for all time. But here, the words of the Medrash break it down into Miyad Uladoros. And Rav Shimon Schwab, in the Sefer Mayan Beis HaShoeva, has a very interesting explanation. And as we'll see, it goes beyond the word Tzav, or more correctly, the word Tzav will go beyond this particular pasuk. Schwab. We're in the world of Korbanos, which of course is a very delicate place to be. It's rather mysterious, and the Torah is very specific in terms of how each Korban is to be brought. But as we know, the bringing of the Korban is not enough. The bringing of the Korban has to be accompanied by the appropriate thoughts and resolutions. For otherwise, if the act of the korbanos becomes a substitute for the betterment of the person, then it actually could end up being a negative pursuit. However, we found throughout many generations that there was sometimes overemphasis, if one could say, on the korbanos themselves, on the bringing of the korban, and little or no emphasis on how a person is meant to be impacted by that experience. As if to say, my korban can do my Yiddish guide for me, and I can carry on in my way. Of course, that is not the case. The Rabbi Eliezer Ashkenazi, the Masi Hashem, explains that the term that accompanies many korbanos, reyach nichoach, pleasing aroma. What is the pleasing aroma of the korbanos? Some of the aromas from korbanos were not so pleasing. And even if some were, but what is the meaning of reyach nichoach? Says the Maasi Hashem, Reach is a sense of something that always precedes the arrival of the thing itself. And you smell the food, hopefully it's on the way. And therefore, the korban itself is a reach, it's an aroma, because it should be a sense of things to come. There should be a follow-up in terms of a person trying to do better, and therefore the korban is almost like the aroma of the way that he would like to better his ways. Reach Nichoach. However, because there's so many details and aspects of the korban, it's possible to lose sight that the person is also meant to be rising up, even as the korban rises up, each in their own way. And thus we find that Yeshaya Hanavi says, and this is in Chazon Yeshayahu, it's the Haftarah for Shabbos Chazon, Yeshaya Perik Aleph, Lama li rov sivcheichem, Yomar Hashem, speaking b'shem Hashem, why do I need all your korbanos? Savati olos elim v'chelev meriim, I've had enough. I'm full up, so to speak, of sated with all of these korbanos. V'damparim u'kvosim v'atudim lo chafatzti, and I don't want them anymore. And the reason why, as the Navi Yeshaya is bemoaning in that perek, is that people were using korbanos in a sense as a substitute for actually trying to do better, so the korban could speak for them. And in a much earlier episode, which we referred to recently, the Haftarah for Parsha Zohar, we find that Shaul HaMelech, in the war with Agag, when he was told to destroy everything, kill everyone and all the animals, and he left the animals, or some of them, alive. Why would he do that? Well, Shmuel asks him, and I hear that the animals are still alive. Why did you keep them alive? So Shaul says, I kept them alive to bring them as a korbanos. And that is a very acute situation, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him that they shouldn't be kept alive. So he has, in a sense, looked upon that directive as something that can be set aside as a means to a greater end, which is to keep them alive to bring korbanos. That is a reversal of what a korban is meant to be. Because the korban is meant to represent a person listening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, if he doesn't listen for the sake of bringing a korban, so that really is an emphasis on certainly what is not the main point. And that is why Shmuel says to him, HaChefetz Lashem ba'olos uzvachim kishmoa b'kol Hashem, does HaKadosh Baruch Hu, does he desire korbanos more than he desires you listening to what he says? Hine shema mizevach tov, listening is better than the best korban. Lahakshiv mechelev elim, to pay attention is better than all of the fat of the korbanos. So we do see that this was, in a sense, a hindrance for us, the Bnei Yisrael, during that time of the Beis Hamikdash, that there was overemphasis on the act of the korbanos, which of course are non-negotiable, but which sometimes eclipsed the requirement that a person have higher aspirations as a result of the korban experience. That said, and Rav Schwab now goes further, it's possible to discern that after the galus of 70 years, which is interesting, because aside from everything else that was happening in the 70 years of galus Bavel, and everything else that wasn't happening, it's probably the first time since we became a people that we weren't bringing korbanos, because we didn't have the wherewithal to bring korbanos. There were no korbanos brought in Bavel. And there was a certain disconnect, therefore. And when the Beis HaMikdash came back, so korbanos came back, and we find the most amazing thing. This is from the Navi Malachi. V'chisagishun iver lizboach. You'll bring iver, a blind korban, an animal that can't see. You offer that as a korban. Ein ra, you don't consider that anything wrong with that. V'chisagishu piseach v'chole. You'll bring as korbanos lame animals, animals that are very sickly. Ein ra, you don't think there's anything wrong. Says the Navi Malachi, hakrivehu lo lepechasecha. If you would offer an animal like that to any official, hayirtzecha, would he be satisfied with that? Oh, hayisa panecha? Would he favor you? So we have an interesting situation where at the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, the Jews are offering defective animals as korbanos. The blind and the lame. Where is that coming from? Which is a good shaila. Says Rav Schwab, it appears that the pendulum at this stage had swung to the other side, as if to say the Jewish people had been so deeply impacted by the fact that the bringing of the korban, that's not what it's all about. It's all about the thought that accompanies it, but the act of the korban without that is empty. So much so that they began to move away from any form of emphasis on how the korban should be brought. As if to say, if the whole point is that it doesn't really make a difference just to bring the korban unless you follow it up with some positive action, so maybe it doesn't make a difference what type of korban you bring. And therefore, if I have an animal that's lame or sick or blind, so God doesn't care. I care. I wouldn't want it in my flock, but he doesn't care because he just wants me to be a better person, so I'll bring that as a korban. And in a sense, this is the polar opposite of the first Beis HaMikdash, where there was too much emphasis on the bringing of the korban without the accompanying purity of intention. And here, the sense was almost the other way around. What difference does it make what you bring as the korban, as long as you have good intentions? And the Navi Malachi says, that's also a mistake. In other words, the two need to be balanced. There's a reason why the Torah requires the type of animal that it does. After all, apart from anything else, if even in terms of the intention and in terms of the experience, if you offer a defective animal as a korban, you're very close to having a defective korban experience, because part of you is saying that was the animal that I was most likely to get rid of anyway. And therefore we find in these two eras, an imbalance in each direction with regards to paying attention to the specifics of the korbanos and the intention behind the korbanos. And Rav Shimon Schwab suggests that this is the zeros that is required when it comes to korbanos. Tzavas Aaron, meaning, as Rashi says, Ein Tzav Ela Loshon Zeros, one needs to be vigilant, one needs to be attentive when it comes to korbanos. Why? Because one needs to maintain that very delicate balance of paying attention to all of the details of the korbanos, and there are many, but on the other hand, never forgetting all of the intentions and kavanos that need to accompany that. And therefore, as the Medrash says, Tzav is a loshon zeros. We're charged with maintaining that balance. Miyad, from the very beginning, uledoros, and in future generations. And that's a reference to each of the generations which overbalanced, respectively, each one in their own way. So this is a very interesting explanation with regards to the opening Rashi. And of course, it's an important statement, as we know, with regards to korbanos in general. And not only korbanos, says Reb Shimon Schwab, ultimately, even when we don't have korbanos, every mitzvah, on a milder level, has the same issue in terms of paying attention to the details of the mitzvah, diktukim and protim, to be precise, to be absolute, to do the mitzvah practically exactly as it needs to be done. But on the other hand, to accompany it with all of the l'shem shamayim, with all of the purity of intent that really represents the innerness of that mitzvah. That's a zeros that is required also, l'doros. The first topic of Parshas Tzav is actually Trumas Hadeshen. That is to say, it is the first service of the morning, where all of the korbanos that have been burning the previous night, and by the morning there are ashes, the ashes need to be cleared away to make room for the next day's avoda, Trumas Hadeshen, the raising up of the ashes. Interestingly, the word truma itself is not a Hebrew word. That is to say, truma as a verb is actually something of a borrowed term. For truma is actually a noun. Truma, like we would talk about truma and maaser. But because it became so well used, even though the word is actually haroma, haromas hadeshen, is the raising up, because the noun of truma really moved into the verb, and therefore everything became known as truma. And then in modern Hebrew, it even becomes, if one solicits a donation, is lahatrim, is to get a person to give truma. And so it goes on. I'm not sure what's next, but in any case, Trumas Hadeshin is the raising up of the ashes and clearing them away. And the Mishnah in Maseches Tomid describes how the Trumas Hadeshin was done. The Kohen ascends, he ascends onto the Mizbeach, and there's ash there. And he actually moves it away, says the Mishnah, to this side and to that side, because there will always be some embers still smoldering from the night before, and those are the ones where actually it is the main mitzvah to lift them up. Not the ashes on the outside, but the embers that are yet smoldering on the inside. So says the Mishnah. The Chasam Sofer comments on this, that actually this mitzvah of Trumas Hadeshin is not only, quote unquote, the mitzvah that begins the day, but it is an expression of the mission statement of Aaron HaKohen. And Aaron, and by extension all Kohanim, we're told to be like Aaron. Ohev shalom v'rodev shalom, to love and pursue peace. Ohev esabriyos mekarvan haTorah, to love people, to bring them close to Torah. And Aaron had a knack for that. He always found a way to bring a person back. He had that touch. Says Chasam Sofer, how did he train to do that, aside from his natural resources? The mitzvah of Trumas Hadeshin is the key. Because when you think about it, what meets the eye when one ascends to the top of the Mizbeach is ash. Meaning, it's all over. There's no going concern, there's nothing happening there. The first mitzvah of the day for a Kohen is to take something that looks like ash and keep on furrowing and keep on rummaging around, moving the ash from this side to that side until he finds something that's still alight. And the Chasam Sofer says, that's what Aaron is meant to do every morning on the Mizbeach, and that's what Aaron proceeded to do as he met with people. As if to say, the knack of Aaron is that he never lost hope. He saw people who are a human expression of ash, as if to say, they're finished. It's over. He's not interested anymore. He's in machlokas with someone. They're never talking to each other again. And on the face of it, there's no solution. Aaron kept going. He moved the ash this way and that way until he found what to work with, because he had faith in the innerness of the Jewish people that he was dealing with, that there's always something burning somewhere, and that's what he lifted up. A very beautiful comment of the Chasam Sofer. And this explanation of the Chasam Sofer is quoted by Rav Meir Shapira in a hesped that he gave for the Chofetz Chaim in 1933. And of course, Rav Meir Shapira is adducing and referencing this explanation of the Chasam Sofer because he was talking about the Chofetz Chaim, who was the Kohen of his generation. And that was his specialty. He reached out to everyone and tried to raise everyone up, and he really performed the mitzvah of Trumas Hadeshin, where others perhaps would have given up hope. The Chofetz Chaim saw yet opportunities to raise people up. And moreover, says Rav Meir Shapira, based on this Chasam Sofer, I understand a comment that is quoted in the name of Rav Haigon. It refers to a Gemara in the beginning of Maseches Brachos. And there, in Daf Gimel, right at the beginning, it talks about how the night is divided up into mishmaros, into different watches. And what does it mean that there are different watches, different malachim are saying shira? The Gemara discusses it at length. And at a certain point, the Gemara says that at three points in the night, at mishmar points, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, bemoans the length of the Golos, that the Jewish people have not been redeemed yet. They're still in Golos. Oy labonim shegalu me'al shulchan aviyam. Woe to the children that have been exiled from the table of their father. When are these three junctures? At what time? Well, the Gemara says there are three mishmaros, three watches. The first time is at the end of the first watch. The second time is in the middle of the night, chatzos. And the third time is at the end of the third watch. So the end of the first, middle of the second, and the end of the third. So says the Gemara. What is the yichus of these times? What is so unique about these times. What's auspicious? Says the Shita Mekubetzes in the name of Rav Hai Gaon. These are the 3 points in the night that Trumas Hadeshen would take place. That is to say, on an average morning, Trumas Hadeshen happens at the end of the night, just as the day begins, the end of the third Mishmar. But the Mishnah tells us in the first parak of Maseches Yuma that on Yom Kippur, in order to prepare things as early as possible so that the Kohen could start the Avodah as soon as possible, the Trumas Hadeshen happened at Chatzos HaLaila. And furthermore, says the Mishnah in Yuma there, during the Regolim, when there was so much traffic and so many people and so many Korbanos, they would actually do the Trumas Hadeshen from the end of the first Mishmar. So says the Mishnah there. It says Rav Hai Gaon, so you see that these 3 times, the end of the first Mishmar, Chatzos, the middle of the night, and the end of the third Mishmar, actually correspond specifically to the times of Trumas Hadeshen. Says Rav Meir Shapira, but what does that have to do with bemoaning the length of the Golos? It's true, there was Trumas Hadeshen at that time, but how do these become key times in that respect? Says Rav Hai Gaon, based on the Chasam Sofer, we understand, because the Golos is the Jewish people in a state of ash. It's the Jewish people in a state where nothing's happening with them, and they're not revived, and they're not returned. And the Jewish people have it within themselves to return. Shuvu Eilaiva, Shuvu Aleichem, unless enough time elapses, and that doesn't happen. But it's something that could happen at any time. Hayomim Bekolu Tishmo'u. And therefore, the times of Trumas Hadeshen are times when what looks like it's finished could yet be revived. And that's why, if there is no revival yet, the Shechina bemoans the continuation of the Golos. Very interesting explanation of that comment of Rav Hai Gaon. So these are from the words of Rav Meir Shapira, and a whole new perspective really on the opening psukim of Parshas Tzav, which there's much more to it than lifting up ash and putting it somewhere else. It's an approach to life, and it's an approach to people. Within the korbanos of Parshas Tzav, we have korban mincha. As we know, a korban is not only an animal or a bird, it can also be a mincha made from flour and oil. And generally speaking, the way that the avoda goes with the mincha is that there's what's called a komet, which are the 3 fingers, essentially a fistful of the mincha is taken and put on the mizbeach, and the rest is eaten by Kohanim. It's Kodesh Kodshi Kodoshim, eaten by Kohanim. That is the rule, and the exception to the rule is to be found in Perek Vav, Pasuk Tet Zayin. Namely, when a Kohen brings a mincha, which he can, of course, he can and sometimes must bring a mincha just like everybody else, says the Pasuk, V'chol minchas kohen, kalil tihyeh, lo teyachel. The mincha of a kohen is kalil. Kalil meaning the entire thing goes on the mizbeach. Lo teyachel. None of it is eaten. So for everyone else who's a non-kohen, a komets, a small amount goes on the mizbeach, and the rest of it is eaten. But for the mincha of a kohen, the entire thing is burnt. And the question is, if we may ask, we can ask, why is it? I know we can ask because the Rambam gives an answer. What is it about the mincha of a Kohen that the whole thing is burnt on the Mizbeach? And the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim in Chelek Gimel, Perek Mem Vav, which is one of his prokim on Korbanos generally, he says something very interesting. The bringing of a Korban, one offers something, you know, one gives of oneself, and that itself is part of the korban experience. Now, generally speaking, says the Rambam, when a Yisrael brings a korban, he offers the whole thing in one form or another. That is to say, the komets goes on the mizbeach, that's offered on the mizbeach. The rest of the mincha, he's not going to see it again. It's consumed by kohanim. So for his part, he has parted with the entire mincha. That's an offering for him, with hopefully the accompanying experience. The rule is, or the norm certainly is, says Rambam, that when a Kohen offers a korban, he typically eats from the korban. And if his friend eats from the korban, then he eats from his friend's korban. And therefore, says Rambam, an amazing thing, were it to be the case that the rule for the mincha of a Kohen is exactly like the rule for a mincha of Yisrael, he would end up offering almost nothing. Because 3 cubic centimeters represented by the komets would go on the mizbeach, which is negligible volume-wise, and he'd eat the rest. So, as some Mefarshim put it, he's essentially brought his lunch to work. Because he brought a korban and ends up eating the whole thing. So where is the offering? That's why the Torah says, in order for the Kohen to have brought a korban, he parts with the whole thing, and the whole thing goes on the mizbeach, not even to another Kohen. Very interesting. This explanation of the Mor Nevuchim is quoted by the Tur in his Perush on the Torah, and the Tur has a shaila. He has a problem, and his problem is this. When it comes to the other types of korbanos, namely a korban of behema, of animals, and korban of oaf, of birds. So with regards to a korban of a behema, a good deal of the animal goes on the mizbeach, what's called the emurim, the sacrificial parts, which are described at length in these parshas. And the rest, the remainder, the limbs, etc., are eaten by the kohanim. When it comes to an oaf, so a chatas ha'oaf, a sin offering that takes the form of a bird, actually, the entire bird is eaten by the kohanim. The only thing that goes on the mizbeach is the blood. Meaning, unlike an animal where part of the animal goes on the mizbeach, food, actually, of the animal goes on the mizbeach, when it comes to a bird, only the blood goes on the mizbeach. The entire bird comes back and is consumed by the kohanim. Says the Tur, what if a kohen offers a chatas ha'of? What will we say? What happens? The halacha is exactly the same thing as when anyone else offers a chatas ha'of. The blood goes on the mizbeach, and the korban is consumed by the kohen, and it could even be by that kohen. Says the Tur, therefore, I have a problem with the explanation of the Rambam. The Rambam said that when it comes to the mincha of a Kohen, if he's treated like everyone else, he ends up parting with nothing. Just a komitzful, a fistful. And he'll eat the rest. That can't be. So the Torah says, let the whole thing go on the mizbeach. Says the Torah, if that's the explanation, so why is it that when it comes to chatas ha'ov, even one that is offered by a Kohen, what the Rambam found unacceptable in a mincha scenario is actually what happens in a chatas scenario. What does he part with on the mizbeach? Blood that he wouldn't be able to consume anyway, and the rest of the animal comes back to him. But that's unacceptable, but that's exactly what happens. This is the question of the Torah. Now, actually, by consulting the words of the Rambam, it seems that he has already preempted this question and resolved it. And the reason why is because the words of the Rambam, and the substance is quoted by the Rambam here, is as follows. Amar harav bamore anavuchim, says the Rambam, quoting the Rambam, states in the Mor Nevuchim, kitam, the reason why the mincha of a kohen is entirely burnt, ba'avor shekol kohen makriv korbano hu ba'atzmo. Every kohen typically offers his own korban and consumes the remainder. Ve'im yakriv mincha v'yochalena, and if he offers a korban and eats it, hu ba'atzmo ki'ilu hikriv davar. It's as if he hasn't offered anything. Because all he's offering is the komets. And then says the Rambam, velodai miut zeha korban. And it's not enough that this korban is so small, miut.
Ella sheyochelena,
but then he noch eats most of it.
V'yidme shelo hikriv korban klal, it's as if he hasn't brought a korban at all.
As if to say, and the critical words, and that's why I quoted from me the Ramban and others essentially the same thing, is that it seems to be a confluence of two factors that represent the problem. Number one, says Ramban, miut zeh korban. It's such a low-grade korban in the first place. It doesn't even have the trappings of a korban, meaning it's flour. It's not like an animal or a bird. And on top of that, he actually eats most of it, then it almost has nothing in common with a korban experience. But the implication of the Rambam is that if you only had the second problem, that he eats most of the korban, but it wasn't a korban like a mincha, but rather more of a korban, like an oaf. It wasn't ma'at, but was more harbeh, then the Rambam wouldn't have that problem. And therefore, and interestingly, Zatur does not quote that concluding sentence from the Rambam, and that's why he had a problem with chatas ha'oaf, but it seems for the Rambam that it's specifically a mincha, which is in itself rather detached from korban per se, and if he ends up eating almost all of it, it has nothing in common with the korban. That would seem to be the straightforward answer to the Torah's question. But interestingly, the Or Sameach, in his notes on the Minchas Chinuch, has a different explanation, and it's based on an Ibn Ezra. We know there are two types of korban to consider here. When one brings an animal, one could bring an ola, which entirely goes on the mizbeach. One could bring a chatos. Sometimes one has to bring a chatos, and there are two different types of korban. And when you bring one, you don't necessarily bring the other at all, unless you have to. But the two are not connected in any way. That is with regards to a korban of behema. Each one has their own destiny, their own dynamic, and never the twain shall meet. When it comes to korbanos from oaf, by and large, those two are offered together. Whenever a person has to bring one, he has to bring the other. If he brings an ola sa'oaf, he brings a chata sa'oaf, and vice versa. Generally speaking, that's the rule. And says the Ibn Ezra, we need to understand that when it comes to the korban of oaf, there's an amazing situation here. Those two korbanos are actually a pair. That is to say, they are a team. The korban oaf is a composite korban. It is comprised of two birds, one for a chatas and one for an ola. Now says Ibn Ezra, should you say to me, why would it be that way? As if to say, when it comes to behema, it's either one or the other. And when it comes to ophos, it's both of them together. Why would they be both together? The answer, says Ibn Ezra, is given the fact that when one brings a chatas ha'oaf, the entire oaf is returned to the Kohen, and none of it, aside from the blood, goes on the Mizbeach, so there aren't really sacrificial parts from the oaf. The Torah doesn't split the bird up in that way. To that end, says the Ibn Ezra, a person who brings a chatas ha'oaf, which will always come back to him, also brings an ola, none of which will come back to him, because the ola sa'of is entirely consumed on the mizbeach. And in a sense, therefore, when it comes to a chatos of an animal, so some of the animal goes on the mizbeach, and some of the animal comes back to the Kohen. When it comes to ophos, so one brings two of them, and it's no longer some and some, but it's one and the other. Because they're a composite korban, so one of them goes on the mizbeach, and the other comes back. I wonder if that ever happened. Now, therefore, says the Or Sameach, this could be the explanation or the resolution of the Torah's question, because the Rambam said to remind ourselves that when one offers a mincha, so if it's the Kohen and he's going to eat the mincha, so then he didn't offer anything. And the Torah's response to that was, well, the same is true for Chatas Ha'ov. He only offers the blood, but he takes the whole bird back. So he also hasn't offered anything. Says the Or Sameach.
But according to the analysis of the Ibn Ezra, that's not true. Because when a person offers a chatas, he gets the chatas back. But we never say he hasn't offered anything. He's offered an entire ola at the same time. And according to the Ibn Ezra, they go together. And that is why it's a korban 100%, even though the Kohen himself gets back the entire chatas of. So this is a fascinating classic or sameach. He has his eye on the entire Torah, what the Ibn Ezra said will help explain the Rambam and the Menuvuchim to explain the question of the Torah. And that is Or Sameach, Sar HaTorah, as he was known. Now, we are discussing Parshas Tzav, having skipped over Parshas Vayikra, but it's very interesting to note these two Parshas because they have so much in common. They discuss pretty much the same thing. They are the two Parshas of Karbonos. Before when we get to the narrative again of Shemini. So everything you wanted to know about Korbanos is to be found in Parshas Vayikra and Tzav. So is there any difference between them? Is it merely that the Torah split the Parsha of Korbanos into two? And half is in Vayikra and half is in Tzav, but essentially it could have been one long Parsha because it's all the same thing. We will see. That is not exactly the case. It's interesting to note, if we pay attention, that there are four types of korban. And between Vayikra and Tzav, they are all spoken about, and the order is changed. So that takes a sweeping view to note that. But it is noted. There is an ola, which the offering goes entirely on the Mizbeach. There's a chatos, the sin offering, osham, the guilt offering, and shlomim, the peace offering. In Chumash, in Parshas Vayikra, the order is, number one, ola, number two, shlomim, number three, chatos, and number four, osham. That's the flow in Vayikra. In Parshas Tzav, if we would characterize it, shlomim has been moved, everything stays the same, but Shlomim has moved from second place to fourth place. As if to say it's no longer Ola Shlomim Chatos Osham, but rather Ola Chatos Osham and then Shlomim. And that's already noteworthy because for all of the similarities, and it's the same Korban, it's being discussed again, but the Torah made a point of shifting the order. What is that all about? So the key to all of this is to be found in the opening words of the Ramban to Parshas Tzav, who notes that if we wish to get a sense of the difference between the two Parshas, we should pay attention to how they open, to how they're introduced. For Vayikra begins, Vayikra al Moshe, Vaydever Hashem Elav Me'ol Moed Le'mor, Moshe is told to speak. To whom? Says the Pasuk, Vayikra Perek Aleph Pasuk Beis, Daber el b'nei Yisrael va'amarta alehem. Speak to b'nei Yisrael and tell them, Adam ki yakrif mikem korban l'Hashem. If you want to bring a korban, this is how to do it. So Parshas Vayikra begins with the words Daber el b'nei Yisrael va'amarta alehem. Parshas Tzav, of course, as we noted, begins Tzav es Aaron ve'es Bonov. So it's interesting that the two parshas of Vayikra and Tzav are directed to two different target groups. Vayikra to Bnei Yisrael and Tzav to the Kohanim. What does that mean? After all, they're all involved. Says the Ramban, his two lines of introduction to Parshas Tzav. Amar HaKosuv beParshas Vayikra. The Pasuk says in the beginning of Vayikra, Daber al Bnei Yisrael. The message is directed to Bnei Yisrael. Why? Ki sham yitzaveh b'havoos hakorbonos. Because there the tzivui is about bringing the korban, bringing it to the Beis Hamikdash. V'Yisrael meviim osam. It's Yisrael who offer the korban. They're the ones who supply it. V'kan, says Ramban in the beginning of Tzav, Amar Tzav es Aro. Why? Ki yidaber b'ma'aseh ha-korbanos, because the focus of Tzav is how the korbanos, the avoda, is performed. And the way the avoda is performed, v'ha-kohanim Ya'asu osam. That's the domain of the Kohanim. So it's very interesting because the story of every korban means that it is brought by a Yisrael to a korban and to a Kohen, and then it is the Kohen that does the avoda. And those two stages, says Ramban, are represented by Parshas Vayikra and Tzav, respectively. Vayikra is the Yisrael bringing the korban, and Tzav is the Kohen processing the korban. And indeed, thus enlightened, we note that Vayikra discusses the circumstances that would lead a person to bring a certain korban. Certainly when it comes to Chatas and Asham, which are brought under specific circumstances, all those circumstances are detailed in Parshas Vayikra, Perek Dalet and Perek Hei. If a person did a chet and he doesn't know, and then he found out, and when does he bring an asham under the following circumstances, all of the circumstances that require one to offer that korban are to be found in Vayikra, because the focus is on Bnei Yisrael, the ones who need to bring the korban. When the Torah comes to discuss Chatas and Ashim and Tzav, it doesn't talk about how the korban came to the Beis HaMikdash, it just assumes that it's there. And now what do you do with it? Because that's the second stage, that's the domain of the Kohanim. The Kohen doesn't mind why the korban is being brought. That's not his priority. His priority is to make sure that he handles it correctly. Interestingly as well, there is no mention in Parshas Vayikra of the Kohanim eating the korban. In other words, there is overlap, quote-unquote, in terms of the avoda of the korban. But in Parshas Vayikra, that's the end. Because, in a sense, the Yisrael has brought the korban and he's seen it through. There's no reference to what happens after that. Because what happens after that is, by and large, in the domain of the Kohanim. It's the Kohen that eats the chatos, it's the Kohen that eats the osha. But that's in Parshas Tzav. Tzav es Aaron es Banav. So the Mepharshim say, and should we wonder, by the way, or at least to have a sense of, does this affect us in any way? After all, we're waiting to bring korbanos in the meanwhile. But interestingly, this is the background to a halachic discussion. We know that in the absence of bringing korbanos, we discuss korbanos and we read the psukim. And the question is, does it make a difference how one reads the psukim? The Parsha of the Talmud and the Mishnayos. There are certain Mefarshim who say, certain Poskim, I should say, who say that when you read the Parsha of the Korbanos, you have to stand up. Because Korbanos, the offering of Korbanos, is Avoda, and Avoda can only be performed standing up. Makes perfect sense. Interestingly, one of the poskim who speak about this is Rabbi Yaakov Emden, who has a very short discussion on this matter in the Sefer Moreh Kutziah, Pirush on the Torah. Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, I was asked, does one need to stand up when one says korbanos? And the answer is no, because my father, the Chacham Tzvi, sat down when he said korbanos, which means that's the end of the story. So that's the easy way to answer Shilas. Just observe. But nonetheless, there are those who maintained, no, one needs to stand up. After all, the milsa b'taima, it makes eminent sense. The avodas of korbanos needs to be done standing. And the parsha of the korban is in kum become the avoda. However, the Balatanya, Reb Shneur Zalman of Liadi, in his Shulchan Aruch Harav, he says, no, one doesn't need to stand up. But why not? Says the Balatanya, because when we read the Parsha of Korbanos, it is simulating what we would have done had there actually been a Korban. But what would we have done had there been a Korban? If we're not Kohanim, and most people aren't, and even a Kohen is not necessarily the Kohen who's doing the Avoda, so for most people, their role in bringing the in Korbanos is to bring it to the Kohen. Now the Kohen will do the Avoda for you. When the Kohen does the Avoda, he needs to stand. Do you need to stand up when the Kohen is doing the Avoda for your Korban? No. And therefore, says the Balatanya, if the Korban was being brought in real life, I wouldn't need to stand up while it was being offered. So I certainly don't need to stand up while I'm reading about it. So that's a very interesting shaila, because ultimately it reflects the question as to what are we looking to simulate when
we're reading the parsha of Korbanos. Is it the bringing of the Korban from the Yisrael to the Kohen, or is it actually the offering of the Korban through the agency of the Kohen itself? But in any case, that's how this question relates to us every morning. But to come back to the issue of Vayikra and Tzav, we've seen, and it's fascinating, specifically because they're so similar to each other, and that's why it's all the more important to have the sensitivity to understand the different atmosphere between the two parshas. But one is about the Yisrael bringing it, and one is about the Kohen offering it. And now say the Mefarshim, as we mentioned, the Korbanos are discussed in a different order in Parshas Vayikra and in Parshas Tzav. Specifically, the Korban Shlomim, which is mentioned second in Vayikra, is left till last in Parshas Tzav. Everything else, in a sense, remains the same, but the Shlomim moved. Why? So the explanation is that from the point of view of the one bringing the Korban, and if that's what characterizes Parshas Vayikra, so the more elevated the bringing of the Korban and the desire and the initiative to bring the Korban, that is what will determine the hierarchy of the order of those Korbanos. The difference between Ola and Shlomim on the one hand and Chatas and Oshem on the other hand, of course, is that by definition Chatas and Oshem are brought when something has gone wrong, and when something has gone wrong you have no choice but to bring them. And Ola and Shlomim can be brought benedava, they can be brought through a person electing to bring them. And they represent therefore only the quote-unquote positive experience that could bring a person to bring a korban, namely, as Shlomim is, laharbo shalom ba'olam, laharbo shalom bein Yisrael, lavim shabbat shamayim, however those korbanos work, but there is no negative background to the bringing of the Ola and the Shlomim. And therefore, if we are discussing the one who's bringing the korban to the Kohen, the one who actually takes the animal and brings it to the Beis HaMikdash, the correct hierarchy is to put the Shlomim next to the Ola. It has pride of place together with the Ola, because they are have purely only positive overtones, as opposed to the Chatas and the Asha. But if we contrast that with Parshas Tzav, and Parshas Tzav, as we said, is from the point of view of the Kohen doesn't get involved with why the Korban is brought to him. His job is to make sure that he brings the Korban correctly. And as we know, if we take a look at those four Korbanos, Ola, Chatas, Asham, and Shlomim, what divides them actually is into groups of three and one, is that if we say our Ezuhu Mekomon, if we're mindful of it, the first three are Kodshe Kadoshim. They are in the higher level of Kedusha of Korbanos. Olos Kodshe Kadoshim, Chatos Kodshe Kadoshim, and so is Asham. Shlomim is Kodshim Kalim. And therefore, from the Kohen's perspective, the order will be Ola, Chatos, and Asham first, and then Shlomim. So this is certainly a fascinating way, on the one hand, of understanding the difference in nuance and detail between the two parshas, and ultimately the entire order of the korbanos in those parshas. I'd just like to present the final, dare I say it, offering for the evening, after our very light discussion of the korbanos here, which relates to very special korbanos. And they are the final section of the parsha, it's Perek Ches, the Miluim. The Miluim for the Mishkan, with the unique preparatory days where there were unique korbanos brought. It's the last, actually, we are in the transition from the Miluim to the running of the Mishkan, because they were the last 7 days of Chodesh Adar. The Yom HaShmini is already Rosh Chodesh Nisan, which is tomorrow. And there are certain korbanos that they had special halachas, never before and never again. Special for the Miluim. And that's when Aaron and his sons are vested and they are activated as him as the Kohen Gadol and his sons as the Kohen. And the Pasuk describes how all this happens. And let's take a look in Perek Ches, Pasuk Tes. So this is Moshe actually putting all of the big day kahuna onto Aaron, onto his sons. And Pasuk Tes tells us,
Vayosim es ha-mitznefes al-rosho. So Moshe put the mitznefes, the hat, onto Aaron's head. Vayosim al-mitznefes el-mul panaves tzitz ha-zav nezer ha-kodesh. And on the hat he put the tzitz. It was arranged in a very specific way, vis-a-vis the mitznefes. Kasher tziva Hashem es Moshe. Okay. So he does what he was told to do. It was all happened. Kasher tziva Hashem es Moshe. What's interesting is, if we move just four psukim later, we will find, and again, Vayakrev Moshe es bnei Aaron. Now he stresses the sons of Aaron, Elazar and Itamar, and also the other two, actually, in Junim Miluim. Vayabishem kutanos, Vayachgoros am avnet, Vayachvosh le mikbaos, he puts on the avnet and the ketones and the kasher tziva Hashem es Moshe. Once again, the pasuk stresses kasher tziva Hashem es Moshe. We had it in Pasuk Tes, we had it in Pasuk, again in Pasuk Yud Gimel, and we will have it again in another four Pasukim in Pasuk Yud Zayin. Also ends, Kasher Tziv Hashem Es Moshe, and another four Pasukim in Pasuk Kaf Aleph ends the same way, Kasher Tziv Hashem Es Moshe, and the same again in Pasuk Kaf Tes. Five times in rapid succession, Kasher Tziv Hashem Es Moshe. And without a doubt, Hadova Omer Darsheni. One could have said it at the end for all of them. One could argue that you didn't need to say it at all. We assume that everything happens. Kasher tziv Hashem es Moshe. And if it was said, but to be said again and again, five times. And then the whole parsha ends off, the final pasuk, Vayas Aaron Avonam is kolad varma, Kasher tziv Hashem biyad Moshe. I mean, it's a refrain. Now, what's interesting is if we would try and answer the question or address the question, why are the words Kasher Tziv Hashem Es Moshe repeated so often in quick succession? We are instantly mindful of what is probably a more well-known case of this phenomenon, of the words Kasher Tziv Hashem Es Moshe being repeated many times over, and that was actually just last week in Parshas Pekudei. The events of Pekudei and as things happen, the words Kasher Tziv Hashem Es Moshe are mentioned 18 times in that parsha. Now, what's important to note is that when we say that the pasuk says many times Kasher Tziv Hashem Es Moshe, and the general intuition is that was at the time that the Mishkan was made, it's not entirely accurate. The making of the Mishkan is in Parshas Vayakel. Parshas Pekudei is not about the making of the Mishkan, it's about the making of the Big Day Kahuna. And in Vayakel, we do not hear Kasher Tziv Hashem Es Moshe as the Oron is made, and as the menorah and the Shulchan. But it's specifically in Pekudei with the Big Day Kahuna that the Pasuk says time and again, Kasher Tziv Hashem Es Moshe. And what are we to make of all of this? I found a stunning explanation of this phenomenon in the Sefer Oznaim LaTorah, which is the Chidushim on the Torah, the Perush of Rav Zalman Sorotskin, Zatzal, the Lutzkarov, who lives here in Yerushalayim at Besof Yoma. And he explains as follows. As we know, in Parshas Tetzaveh is famous for being the only Parsha from the birth of Moshe that does not have Moshe's name in it. And the Mefarshim explain that what's behind this is that Moshe said at a certain point, at the critical point, the dangerous time of the Chet HaEgel, he says, Mecheni no misifrecha, if you were to destroy the Jewish people, Mecheni, so wipe me out as well. Now that was a heroic act. In the event, the Jewish people were saved. But kililas chacham afilu al tanai miskayemes. If the chacham says something, it will find its mark. And thus, there was a partial fulfillment of Moshe's Mecheni no misifrecha, that there is one Parsha that his name does not feature there. That's Parshas Tetzaveh, and of course it's pointed out that Parshas Tetzaveh is the week that the Yortzeit of Moshe Rabbeinu always falls. Zayin Adar is always in Parshas Tetzaveh, and therefore as he leaves the world, that's the time that his that section of the Torah Moshe is missing. However, as much as there are dynamics in play here, whereby he said Mecheni no misifrecha, and once he said it, it will find its mark, quite true. But nonetheless, do we not all agree that Moshe only said it for the best of reasons? And thus, says the Oznaim LaTorah, it seems reasonable that even if the klala finds its mark and his name is missing, but he should be compensated. That is to say, Parshas Tetzaveh is the parsha which contains the mitzvah of how to make the big day kahuna. Vasisa big day kodesh la'ar nechicha, vasei lehem mitba'os, vasisa lehem chagurim, abnitim. And therefore, says Aznaim la Torah, if you wish to understand why the Torah, as true as it is, that his name is not to be found in Parshas Tetzaveh, but the subject of big day kahuna, he is compensated. In Parshas Pikudei, when it says about the manufacture of the Big Day Kahuna, so Moshe Rabbeinu appears many times over. Kasher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe, Kasher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe, in order that his name yet be associated, at least with the subject matter of Parshas Tetzaveh, that his name was absent from that Parsha. Very interesting. And what makes it all the more interesting is that Parshas Tetzaveh actually deals with two topics. It is the tzivui for two things. Number one, the making of the Big Day Kahuna. And number two, it is there that the tzivui for the 7 days of the miluim was given. And therefore it says, Aznaim la Torah, if you wish to understand how you have the same phenomenon twice, that is to say, the numerous repetitions of Kasher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe in Pikudei, and once again in Parshas Tzav, the answer is, it is for the same reason. Because Parshas Tzav, which is a description of the days of the Miluim, Parshas Tzav is to the Miluim what Pikudei is to Big Day Kahuna. It is a description of how it actually played out. And as surely as Moshe Rabbeinu was compensated in Pikudei for his name being absent from the Big Day Kahuna section of Parshas Tetzaveh, so too in Parshas Tzav, his name is mentioned repeatedly in reference to the Miluim to compensate him for his absence in the Miluim section of Parshas Tetzaveh. And that is wonderful. And we haven't finished. Because it happens to be that Parshas Tetzaveh, the parsha from which Moshe's name is missing, discusses generally two things, Big Day Kahuna and Miluim. But actually, it discusses briefly one other thing. The very first two psukim of Tetzaveh, Vatot Tetzaveh b'nei Yisrael, v'yikru elecha shemen zayis zach, Kosis la ma'or lahalos ner tamid ba'ol mo'ed michutz la paruchas ha'edus yaruch osu onu v'aru v'vonu me'erav ad boker lifnei Hashem. The first two psukim of Parshas Tetzaveh are the first reference to the mitzvah of lighting the menorah. Okay, as we said, Moshe's name isn't mentioned in the Parshas Tetzaveh. The treatment of the menorah, fullest, is to be found in the beginning of Parshas Balosecha. Daber al Aaron, Balosecha Saneros, El Mul Penei HaMenorah, Ye'iru Shiva Saneros. That is how Aaron is to light the menorah. Says the Pasuk in the beginning of Balosecha, Perek Ches, Pasuk Gimel, Vayas Kein Aaron, Aaron did thus. El Mul Penei HaMenorah, He'ele Neroseha, he lit the lights, Ka'asher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe. That is the third installment of Kasher Tziva Semesh Moshe, covering all of the three areas of Tetzaveh that Moshe's name was missing from. They will all be accompanied, each one in its place, with the words Kasher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe. That is the explanation of the Lutzke Rav, if one may say, perhaps inspired by the menorah reference, Kaftor Vaferach. It is the most beautiful interpretation. And these are some of the aspects of Parshas Tzav, which often is relegated to perhaps less iyun than other parshas, but of course, the more we look into these things, the more we invest in them, the more we leave Ruchush Gadol. We'll leave it over there for this evening. Mitzvah Hashem, next week, we'll take a look at Inyanei Haggadah.